Welcome to the Real Docs Podcast, hosted by Dr. Britt Lesher and Dr. Lisa Jung. Dr. Britt and Dr. Lisa are two licensed naturopathic doctors, passionate about all things health and wellness. They are on the mission to break down wellness trends, variety of conditions with a naturopathic and holistic lens. Tune in every Wednesdays for new episodes. This podcast does not act as medical advice and should not be used as a substitute for medical care. Please contact your healthcare professional for questions regarding your health.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Real Docs Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Brittany Lesher.
And I'm Dr. Lisa Jung.
And we are back with our season one episode 3. Today we're going to be talking about a topic that has been coming up a lot, is all over a lot of the social medias, TikTok. Seems like there's been a big boom in this condition, but we're going to be talking about polycystic ovarian syndrome, also known as PCOS. And I guess just to start, we're going to be giving some background as to what PCOS is, what kinds of symptoms come along with this condition, and some things that maybe we've seen in practice to be very helpful, what common therapies there are, and kind of our take on this type of condition that we've seen in our patients.
Right. And I think what Dr. Lesher said too is that there is maybe big boom because of the social media as well. But I think even just clinically, we were seeing a lot of women, getting diagnosed with PCOS, right? And it's probably one of the most prevalent, if not the most common condition that's diagnosed in women. And it's really interesting too, because I feel like a lot of folks who get diagnosed with PCOS, when you ask them, there's really not a lot of guidance that people are getting from their providers, right? Yeah. I think the most common quote unquote therapy is getting on birth control. And it's sometimes just disheartening because for us as naturopathic doctors, there's so much that we can do. But, in other fields of medicine or, you know, even allopathic and conventional, it just sounds so like limited in terms of the therapies that are available. So this is also to give and shed some light on that as well.
Yeah. And I think, like, to your point, oftentimes in a conventional setting, the main recommendation is to go on birth control. And unfortunately, that is the answer that a lot of people will get from their providers when they're diagnosed with any sort of hormonal condition, unfortunately. Because I can understand, I hear a lot of patient stories, and I can understand that, like, some of these symptoms are very hard to live with. And when you've been going through that for a really long time, sometimes the idea of like taking a pill and getting rid of some of these issues does seem nice, but the reality is that it does not treat the root cause, right? So as soon as you remove that birth control pill, you know, sometimes even people are on the birth control pill and it's not making things better, right? It's like that idea that, like, sometimes the medication doesn't work 100% for everyone, right? So can you tell us a little bit about what PCOS is?
Yes, I think that's a really good start. So how I usually approach PCOS with my patients, I like to kind of put it in the lay word or
layman's terms.
Thank you. I was like, lay word.
A lay word.
So PCOS is basically more of a metabolic condition that just kind of shows up hormonally. I feel like that kind of explains a lot of the common things that you see with PCOS, which is like insulin resistance or like diabetes and things like that, right? So in terms of polycystic ovarian syndrome, in terms of, I think we can kind of talk about like the diagnosis criteria, because I think that explains a little bit about what the condition is. So the typical thing within that criteria of PCOS is that you see this classic string of pearls. So you have poly, which means many, cyst, as a cyst, and within your ovaries. So there's just multiple cysts that are forming in your ovaries versus normally and ideally there's just one cyst at a time, right? You know, other thing is that whenever, you know, with our ovaries, they're the ones that are producing our hormones, especially, you know, estrogen and progesterone, that's just going to be shifted in terms of your levels, whether it's, you know, low, high. I would say typically it's like the common things I see are like more of like excess estrogen and low mm-hmm. progesterone. Mm-hmm. But we also see a lot of androgens, which is testosterone or even DHEA, mm-hmm. which is kind of like a precursor to testosterone. So there's just a lot of hormonal imbalances, excess hair growth, acne, that usually come up in terms of polycystic ovarian syndrome. Anything you want to add, Dr. Lesher?
Yeah, I always kind of joke with my patients that in PCOS syndrome, it's like because of the excess testosterone, because of the excess androgens, which are the primary hormones produced in men, we start to turn into little men. We start to lose hair on our head. Maybe we break out in acne. We start to grow hair on our chins, right? Some people even report like being a little bit more irritable, mm-hmm. right? Changes in mood. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting. And I think that a lot of times we get into when, especially when it's a syndrome, right? Mm-hmm. A syndrome is essentially just like a collection of symptoms. Mm-hmm. It's so hard because I feel like so many women are dealing with different types or drivers of PCOS, mm-hmm. but because it's PCOS, they get put into this bucket, right? When it's really like, there's so many, like what we call phenotypes, right? Or like pictures of PCOS, because right. sometimes people don't have the string of pearls, but then they have all of those other symptoms that you were talking about. And sometimes it's, they don't have those symptoms, but they have the string of pearls or in regular periods, right? So yeah, it's very interesting how and like the how and why the evolution of how PCOS has come to be, like that diagnosis has been put on certain people, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Lesher, what would someone who has PCOS, what's kind of like the classic symptoms and signs that yeah. they can see?
Symptoms? So
symptoms and signs.
Okay, yeah. So symptoms, so a lot of it, like you mentioned, the signs of like the hyperandrogenism, right? So you're kind of turning into a mini man, right? So with some people will get the like hair, hirsutism, coarse hair growth on the chin. Some people get it along the jawline or just on their chin. A lot of people will have even losing hair on their head, right? You're balding on your head, but you're growing hair on your face. Acne is a big one. Weight gain, and that's kind of associated with the metabolic condition that's happening behind the scenes. Struggling with getting pregnant, that's another one. I think a lot of people will also start to notice, like, on the side of it, like, maybe issues with digestion, issues with sleep, right? Kind of hinting to the cortisol being off. A lot of times people will come to me and like, I feel like I have the hypercortisol syndrome, like that we think about, right? With the metabolic disorder, the moon phase, all of those types of things. So I think those are some of the signs or like symptoms that people will complain of.
Right. And I think like moon phase is like so big because it's like, so for some people, it's like just like puffiness. Like,
yeah.
I wake up in the morning and I just look so puffy. Like that would be also like a classic one
yeah.
or a common one. And I think like, maybe we haven't talked about this a little more, but like irregular to like no periods,
yeah.
right? Like irregular in the sense of like, some people I think go like 40 to 60 days of a cycle yeah. until like they have another period, or like it can sometimes even be like spotting. And yeah, I think like this isn't something like a symptom, but like just like, are you ovulating yeah. or not too is
and
a
I
big
think
thing.
Like what we were talking about before, the different drivers, like depending on the patient and what the driver behind the PCOS is, you can kind of have your own, what we call your phenotype or your picture of them, right? Because I definitely have the patients who are having the, you see the insulin resistance, you see the metabolic disorder, you see the hirsutism. Then I have the other patients who are dealing more with the cortisol side, mm-hmm. the puffiness, the irregular periods, those types of things. So I think it's more of like being able to classify what your driver is. Mm-hmm. I guess like, stepping back a little bit into like the different reasons why someone would develop PCOS. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like you mentioned with the like insulin resistance and things like that. Are there other like known drivers that, or that you've seen in practice that can like push someone towards that diagnosis?
Yeah, I think, you know, the probably the most common thing that I see with my patients with PCOS is there's going to be some significant like birth control history. Like, I think that's like a big contributor, you know, but it's also kind of frustrating because in conventional medicine, and again, kind of in the evidence research world, there's like no specific ties or, you know, relations that birth control causes PCOS for people, right? But I think it goes even beyond that of like, you know, sometimes it's just like the endocrine disruptors or like toxin exposure. Sometimes it might just be stress. Sometimes it might just be more of like the crappy processed foods that we're getting that is just driving a lot of this like
metabolic side of it.
And it just like worsens and worsens. And then your body at that point, when like once you have PCOS and once there's any sort of like insulin resistance or just blood sugar dysregulation that's happening, your body just has to work even harder than normally to, you know, deal with sugar, deal with all these different things. And then at one certain point, your body just kind of gives up. And then that's when you start having insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, like metabolic syndrome, like and all these different things. And it's just so complicated in a way of like just so much that happens even from this one condition.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because like with PCOS, it just shows you, like even in naturopathic medicine, we always talk about like a systems approach, a holistic approach. I think PCOS, patients diagnosed with PCOS can get so much help from seeing a naturopathic provider because it is so complicated. It does involve different hormonal processes, right? Like I think it's labeled as a neuroendocrine disorder, but endocrine just means hormone-based, right? Or the messengers in our body that are sending signals. And it's just an ode to like, why would something going on with hormones that are produced by our ovaries and our adrenal glands have any tie to insulin, which is released from our pancreas, right? It's like, which is more considered part of like our gut, right? But there is that hormonal side of the pancreas that's involved in insulin production. But it's just so interesting seeing this integrative approach of this condition. Like it involves so many different things. I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but I have not seen any like theories on this, but you touched on like stress being a driver for PCOS. Like there's always a significant history of like stress or like chronic stress, or maybe like an incident, like an isolated incident where they had a lot of stress being a driver. And it's really interesting because I kind of theorize like in the female body, our stress hormone, our insulin levels are so closely tied to our reproductive hormones because the purpose of producing reproductive hormones such as estrogen and progesterone is because we need to produce a baby,
right?
But it's like, we're not going to be adequately producing the hormones that we need if we're under a lot of stress, right? And stress in the female body, I think, looks different than like, for example, like men.
Yeah. And I think that's such a good point that you brought up. And even like the theory, because anytime, even with like the gut aspect of things, whenever I talk about that with patients with stress, but even with hormones, the signaling molecule to adrenal glands to produce cortisol is the same that produces FSH and LH to our ovaries to produce estrogen and progesterone, right? So there's kind of like that HPA axis theory, which for you guys who don't know, it's the hypothalamus pituitary axis. It's a fancy name.
The brain to the organ.
Exactly. Brain to organ kind of communication, axis communication. When one goes off, the other goes off. That's usually how I explain to people in that, you know, if the signaling from like the base of your brain to ovaries are going to be messed up, then who's to say it's not going to be messed up for the signaling to your adrenal glands for stress, right. Or vice versa. So I think there's like so much merit and just like so much that we can like delve into of like what you said as well. And, you know, this is like a little off topic, but like something that we talk about in men versus women or males versus female body people is that fasting, like intermittent fasting looks very different for each group, because for men, there's only just one kind of hormone, which is testosterone, that just every day they're having testosterone, versus for women, it's like estrogen and progesterone are kind of like, and obviously like testosterone, DHEA too, but like, let's say just those two, just to start off, those are always fluctuating depending on a cycle, depending on like what week or what phase we're in terms of cycle. So it's so different in terms of just anything hormones really in female body people versus male. So sorry, off tangent, but I think that was like a very important thing we had to like lay out.
So that kind of ties into like what I was thinking about. Why are so many women being diagnosed with PCOS? And I really think it is partially, maybe not 100%, and this is just my theory, is that we have set up our lives as women to be so very similar to how a man would live that it almost is like our body produces the testosterone to be able to keep up with it.
Oh my God.
Right? And because I was thinking about this, like we do tell women fast, we tell them to do high intensity exercise, right? Like all of, we eat a lot of protein, all of that stuff, right? And some of these things, like I can understand the reasons why we recommend it, but I just think like where our bodies are so different from men.
Right.
Like if you think of our primitive beings, the men would most likely wake up in the morning on a fast, leave, go for a hunt, a lot of stress, a lot of cortisol, probably, you know, pushing that. And the women, we were like the maternal hunter gatherers. We would graze, we would, you know, it was a lot slower, and we couldn't survive off of that much cortisol because it wouldn't help us produce a baby, right? Mm-hmm. Like we can't have offspring in high stress, fasted states, right? So that is kind of my theory, right? I know it's PCOS is so much more complex than that, but that's what I like to try to explain to people, because I do also notice that a lot of my PCOS patients are so type A. They love the control. They love the da, da, da. They love the like,
I can't let go.
Thriving in a stressful situation. Right. They love that.
Right.
And there are a lot of variations, but I just see that so common, especially when they have the high androgens and the high testosterone. It's like they're always really type A.
Yeah.
And they've been doing the fasting, they've been doing the high intensity, all of that stuff.
Yes. It's so funny because like sometimes I don't know if I say it's a joke, but like kind of like what you joke about with your patients about like, oh, you're turning into little men. I have this thing, or I think in a lot of like people in medicine probably looking back at it is probably thinking this too, of like, you know, like back in the day, like the circus, like the bearded lady, like everybody's like, oh, that's like the PCOS lady.
Yeah.
Like it's like the classic hair
what
girl,
like,
you know, like the metabolic you know, syndrome and all of that. So I was just like, oh, like it's really funny, like remember like the bearded lady from like all these circus days, like that's PCOS.
Seriously?
That's like the PCOS. But you know, like jumping off of what you were saying too, of like one of the, you know, it's not, I don't want to call it complication, but I guess in a way like a secondary consequence that gets brought up with PCOS is having difficulty conceiving, right? And you know, not being able to have a baby as easily as like, you know, like another person without PCOS.
Right.
And this always bothered me because even through my like residency days and even now, a lot of, I know it's generalizing, right? And that's what I'm trying to avoid, but a lot of providers out there are diagnosing people with PCOS and basically telling them you can't have a baby.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's so messed up in terms of delivering it like that, in terms of like, no, like, I feel like it should be phrased as like, yeah, it's going to be a little bit difficult to have a baby, but it doesn't mean someone's like infertile for like indefinitely, you know?
Yeah.
But again, I think, you know, we also need to address in terms of there is that difficulty conceiving because your hormones are out of whack.
Yeah.
There's definitely the stress component that Dr. Lesher was talking about that's going to inhibit the someone's ability to have conceive.
Yeah.
And just, there's just so many different factors that go into having a baby.
Yeah.
But PCOS is definitely one of like, I would say it's like probably like the lowest hanging fruit when it comes to like working someone up of why are they having difficulty conceiving and things like that.
Yeah. So I think like moving into our next point about like, how does someone get diagnosed with PCOS? You mentioned the criteria. Mm-hmm. I think if you feel like you're struggling with symptoms that are similar to PCOS, then going to a provider and asking for the androgen test, so the testosterone, the DHEA, you know, asking for a pelvic ultrasound, right, to see if you have the string of pearls. The other thing that I was going to mention about PCOS and the string of pearls and like why some people get that and why some people don't, because I have had, obviously you can have, different symptoms and the criteria, based on like which some symptoms you have, you can still get a diagnosis. Right. Cause I have seen patients where it's like, they don't have the string of pearls, but they have all of the other symptoms and the elevated androgens. Right. I heard about the string of pearls and the cysts on the ovaries being talked about in such an interesting way. So I wanted to share that with you because it's like, where are these cysts coming from? Are they cysts truly? Are they just, some people have talked about them as being like excess follicles, right? The idea that like you're having a regular period, so you're not ovulating, you're not releasing an egg every time, and those eggs build up to looking like cysts. It's very confusing because I think some people will get told like you have cysts versus like you just have a lot of follicles present that are making it appear cystic in nature. But it's very interesting too because with birth control, like you mentioned, a lot of people do have a history of using birth control. And we know that birth control can inhibit that process of you ovulating. Right. That's how it protects you from getting pregnant. Yeah. Right. But
you know,
where do those follicles go?
Yeah. What's so interesting is that, so I have a case of a patient who has gotten a pelvic ultrasound, not ordered by me, but like by someone, and then got established with me. And her ultrasound says multiple follicles, but suspicious of PCOS, but like, or like it, PCOS cannot be ruled out. And I was just like, oh, that's really interesting. They didn't label it cysts.
Yeah.
They labeled follicles.
Right.
But when you also look at her parameters, like her blood labs and things like that, not high androgen, but definitely like high estrogen, low progesterone, kind of like what I mentioned. But what's also very interesting, and I know we learned this, you know, through our school and things like that, and it's not a, you know, acceptable parameter for diagnosis of PCOS, but I've always learned in my training, it's like suspicious of PCOS, and it's the FSH-LH ratio.
Oh, yeah.
And FSH-LH, we mentioned it before, it's the signaling molecules from the base of a brain to your ovaries, right? It's almost like, does your brain have to just gently communicate, you know, we love a good communication, you know, are they just being like, hey, like estrogen, progesterone, like we love that. Or if your FSH and LH are being high and elevated, it's almost like your brain screaming at your ovaries to do their job. Like, hey, what the hell? Why aren't you making estrogen, progesterone? Come on. You're being slow. Chop, chop, chop. That kind of sort of stuff. And you know, this patient of mine like has really high, or maybe it wasn't this patient. I'm getting my patients, their labs a little confused, but like I've seen, you know, patients' labs, you know, with their FSH and LH being like frankly elevated, you know, no matter like what time of the phase or like the follicular or luteal phase that they are.
Yeah.
So it's also, you know, interesting of like, if there's so much of this signaling molecules that are going to the ovaries, who's to say that's more at risk of someone developing these cysts or follicle or you know, things like that, right?
Right.
So that's at least like one of my theories as well. But I really like, I like that.
Yeah, I think like it's the, that's the thing that we're kind of touching on, is that it's, there's so many different appearances of how PCOS comes up. And I think conventionally it's easy, it's easier to just say like, this is PCOS, this is what we do for it,
right?
Versus in naturopathic medicine, on my mind, whenever I come into contact with a patient that's been diagnosed with something, my mind is always like, but why? Why does this happen in people? What causes it, right? And I will say that PCOS is like one of those things, they're like, we kind of have an idea, we kind of have some working theories, but we just don't know, right? Like for sure what's driving these things. And I think it's because PCOS technically should probably be broken up into different conditions, really. But it's just kind of put into this bucket, right? And which is why the treatment for it is often the birth control, because it's just like, oh, we're just going to call it this. And we're going to give it this and all your problems will be solved. But that's really, in our experience, not really what happens.
And I feel like what you mentioned earlier too, like whenever something is called syndrome, it usually just like in layman's term, it's just nobody can figure it out. It's kind of like the diagnosis of exclusion, the end.
Yeah.
You know, and it's such a
It's lazy.
It's crappy. Like, like we don't like that. Anyways.
It's like IBS.
Yeah. And that's what, like, it's so funny. One time in residency, I got in trouble because I told a patient in front of my supervisor, I was like, yeah, IBS, it's a syndrome. Like, it's a bad diagnosis. It's a crappy diagnosis.
Yeah.
I was like, I think I verbatim said it's a trash diagnosis. And my supervisor looked at me and like, I can't say that. And I'm like, yes, I can. Like, it is a trash
diagnosis. Keep it real. And we will keep it real.
Yeah. Come on. Like, I don't sugarcoat things. So. So then what would be, we obviously talked about, you know, the typical conventional therapy, right? It being birth control. What would you say is like for you, like the common things you use for your patients with PCOS?
So I would say for me, I always go back based on their clinical picture and their lab testing. I will decide, okay, what is it that is driving your PCOS? Because I understand there are certain like recommendations that we can make. We can put people on birth control. Some people use metformin, right, for the insulin resistance, those types of things. But I always try to go back to like, what is it that is actually driving the underlying process? What's the hormonal disruption that's happening? If it is a insulin resistance picture and it's just like, you know, working on the diet, working on increasing protein, decreasing refined carbohydrates. Maybe these people are like doing the high intensity interval training on a fast, like stop that, right? Because that is driving, like hunger is also a stressor, right? So I think that people often think, are told so many times with insulin resistance, like, you just need to eat less and work out more. And we see time and time again that that does not work for everyone.
It's especially like 2000s. Like, we don't like that.
It's harmful. Yeah. It's harmful because what are those people doing? They're eating less and they're working out more. They're not sustaining their body and they're causing a stress reaction, right? Which is just perpetuating that inappropriate signaling that's happening. So yeah, that's more for like the insulin resistance. What about you?
I think you kind of nailed it in that it's different in terms of what they present with, right? One of my biggest thing, and not just for PCOS, I always tell people my biggest thing when it comes to treating or treatment is that I don't just go straight into supplements. I really try to hone in on terms of like dietary lifestyle things before we add on supplements. And supplements sometimes is more of, do we want to, you know, is this something that's necessary? Yeah. Or can we come back to it? Or can we get it from food source? That kind of sort of stuff, like you said. So definitely more of like stress management is going to be a big piece for honestly, like I think all phenotypes of PCOS, definitely more protein, like you said, and just like mindfulness of like eating or just stress and all of that. Right. Definitely. I'm like a big fan of like
low tox, no tox as much as possible. So, you know, I'll usually talk about, you know, eliminating or reducing toxic burden. Even just like things like, you know, we can do castor oil packs or just some liver support and, you know, that kind of sort of stuff, like sauna. But when it comes to actual supplements, right? Like, I think berberine is like amazing for insulin sensitivity. Sometimes I'll say like cinnamon in your yogurt.
Oatmeal.
I'm not a big fan of cinnamon, but why don't you put cinnamon? Actually, I've gotten better about cinnamon, but cinnamon is a really good insulin sensitizer. And it's like, you know, our goal is to not be on cinnamon or berberine or metformin for the rest of our life. But just in the meantime, we can use that to really support the insulin and the blood sugar. I think inositol is probably like big thing, even on like social media, right? Because of its, you know, in different studies, its effect in terms of improving not just the hormone parameters and androgens and all of that, but even just like insulin resistance, like HOMA-IR, like blood sugar and all of that. So I think that's probably like a fan favorite. I would definitely say, you know, more of like pumpkin seeds are also great because if it's like high androgens, it's really helpful for decreasing that, or like pumpkin seed butter if you don't like eating seeds.
That kind of reminds me of like something that we wanted to talk about in the future, but like the seed cycling and cycle syncing, right? Like kind of obviously if things are a little disrupted, like trying to remind your body what you, what it's supposed to be doing. And there are certain seeds that have been shown to help support, not increase, but just support healthy levels of either estrogen or progesterone, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think the stress management piece is a big one, just because we aren't realizing, even just in our thought process, right? Like, there's the mental health aspect of stress management. And then there's like the physical things, like what is like making our physical body release a stress response versus like perceived stress. Because a lot of times people will have the anxiety, you know, people live very high stress jobs and lives, and it's very hard to kind of get a grip on it. And I feel like there's a lot of things that someone could be doing that is actually making them feel stress in their body. So naturally it's hard for you to feel calm in the mind, right? Like we always talk about that, the starvation signal being a stress signal, right? And oftentimes people are not fueling their bodies in the beginning part of the day. A lot of people are just living off of that
caffeine,
right? Like coffee on an empty stomach, probably one of the biggest things that I talk to my patients about when it comes to PCOS, because a lot of that perpetuates the cortisol stress response. And you're not going to feel calm in your body. You're not going to feel calm in your mind if you're not feeling calm in your body. If your body's like, I haven't been fed. You expect me to go to this HIIT class. But like I was mentioning, a lot of my patients are so type A, where they're like, I'm doing all of these things. It's always those patients like, I'm doing all of these things. Why aren't things changing? Yes. Right.
We all have to collectively learn how to let go.
Yes.
It's even for like me, like I've recently had like some health stuff where a lot of it stems from stress and like not knowing how to manage stress. And I feel like we always like, as women talk of like, oh, like I feel like I'm like handling stress well, but it's just like, No,
you're not.
No, we're not.
That's why I feel like a big piece, like lifestyle medicine that I talk about with patients with PCOS, is like telling them that theory of like, we really are forcing our bodies to adapt to a man's world. And I feel like we really, the more we can kind of get back to our primitive, what our primitive bodies would do, that like, Not necessarily saying like you have to have children, but like the maternal, like think of our maternal ancestors and like what kinds of like dietary patterns they would be following and things like that. I think it's important that you brought up the like low tox thing, because that is something that we could talk about like it could have
all day long.
Yeah, the endocrine disruptors. The world we live in today is not the same world that our bodies evolved in, no. Right? So
yeah.
It's like really crazy how much we have to be aware of with what we put in our bodies, on our bodies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad that we talked about this one first because it is a big one. I feel like all over my TikTok page, it's like nutritionists, mm-hmm. people, you know, people that have healed their own PCOS, right? Like giving advice to everyone. And sometimes I'll get patients and, you know, it'll be one of those ones where it's like, they don't have the insulin resistance and they're asking me about berberine, but I have to explain to them, like the insulin resistance for you is not what is driving the PCOS syndrome, right? So I think that's the part where it's important to work and talk with a healthcare professional to understand what is actually driving the process behind a lot of these symptoms for you specifically so that you can get a good recommendation. If you don't have insulin resistance, it's not going to be helpful if you take berberine, right?
Yeah. And let's be real. Like, I feel like we live, and this isn't like shade to anybody. Like, I hope not. Just in case. But, you know, I feel like we also live in a world where people want the instant gratification. Yeah. Or like, you know, we always talk about in medical school, like if you had this one magic pill that's going to cure your condition, there is no magic pill. Yeah. You know, your health and everything is an investment. It's a work that you have to put in. It's an effort you have to put in. You know, sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's not. And sometimes it's a wave of things. You know, I feel like social media does a really good job of like, oh, this supplement will cure your PCOS or, you know, whatever. But it's like, again, it's almost like a standard of care where like you're putting someone in a box, but not necessarily everyone's going to fit into that box.
Yeah.
So if you see anything on TikTok and Instagram or whatever, and someone's trying to sell you something of that's going to cure your thing, question it.
Yeah.
Question it.
Because I think a big thing that comes along with that, it's always like, one supplement.
Yes.
This is what I took to heal my PCOS. And, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are going to start purchasing products from God knows where and taking all sorts of crazy doses. And I think that is the one thing that we always try to talk to our patients about, like adequate dosing, adequate supply, right? Like, I think we were trained on like how to spot out a good quality product. Mm-hmm. Supplement wise, right? How to vet these companies, but also like the studied doses on people. And even like we touched on this in another episode already, but like sometimes the research there's not going to be people that fit into that, right? Like they try to get a good sample size, but it may not be reflective of every single person, right? In the world. And so we do tend to kind of pool bits and pieces and like generalize to people in the public about certain research things. But I think it's important to really pay attention to your body and work with a provider who knows you specifically, right?
Yes. Yes. And I feel like you and I also probably get patients who, you know, they're like, I heard this about TikTok or social media or whatever. Yeah. And then I tried it. It didn't work.
Right.
What's wrong with me, or like what's going on with me? And it's like it's also our job to like explain that of like, well, you don't fit into that criteria, so you fit into this criteria. That thing you tried is in this criteria,
right?
It doesn't work for this criteria, so parsing out that. And it's like it's so sad sometimes because it's like such a waste of time and resources for people.
Yeah.
But you know, I think to each their own. Like sometimes, it works for people and that's great, and for some people it doesn't work. That just means, you know, not all hope is lost. It's more of you might have to do more investigation of what's really going on.
Yeah.
Hope you guys enjoyed this episode about PCOS and everything in between and a little tangents.
Yes.
If you guys have any questions or comments, definitely leave us a review or, you know, questions, and we would love to answer these for you. Maybe one day we'll have like a Q&A.
Oh yeah, that would be really cool.
All the questions we've gotten, because I feel like every time we talk about a topic, some questions are going to come up, and
we'd
love to clarify that for you. We can talk for hours.
Yes.
Not that we will, but yeah. So
I feel like even this topic specifically with PCOS, like we could have multiple different parts.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Where we even just dive into the different like genres or the phenotypes, right? So that could be something that we do in the future too.
Yes, for sure. But yeah, hope you guys enjoy this episode.
We'll see you next time.
See you next time. Bye. Keep it real.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Real Docs Podcast. Don't forget to like and share this episode and follow us on our social media pages. Tune in every Wednesday for more episodes.